Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Yeah, and this is a special movie. Special movie of all the movies we've done. One of the special ones. Yeah, I really thought so.
Good.
Yeah, this is episode number 66. And we're going to talk about a 2004 movie called Ushpizin. Orthodox Jewish film. Is that what you'd call it?
I suppose it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thanks for picking this one.
Oh, well, we must both thank Joseph Suzinka, because I never would have heard of it if I hadn't read his review.
Ah.
And for me, I agree. I find this movie is in some ways as simple and straightforward as The Castle.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, with a completely different orientation, and it's charming and joyful. And it seems to me like people who don't care about faith would also enjoy it. But what do you think?
I would think so.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things Joseph said in his review is he called it Capra-esque. And
yes.
I think in a way, I think that really nails it perfectly.
Yes.
You know, people who aren't religious enjoy It's a Wonderful Life. And
right.
You know, so I think in the same way that they would enjoy this movie.
Yeah, I guess so, because I think in addition to it giving a really interesting little look at the Hasidic world, Jewish world? See, here's where I'm going to get into trouble, because I can't keep track of all the, yeah, Hasidic, I can't say it, Baal Teshuva, maybe. Mm-hmm. Sorry to everyone. I know at least Lee or Leah. See, I can't even say her name. I don't know how to say it, but mm-hmm. who is Orthodox, who listens. But it gives a look into that community and that way of faith, but it's a great story at the same time. And I think if you want to understand how people relate to God in their lives and see God working through events, this is a wonderful look at it in a very entertaining way.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
And I come away from this knowing, you know, again, how little I know. You know, sometimes you get in your little box and you sit in there and you say, oh, I'm getting pretty content with everything. And you watch this and you're like, holy cow. You know, I had no idea this sukkah, whole tradition, the sukkot, is, I can't remember if they pronounce it T.
I think that's it. And sukkot. Or,
uh-huh. Yeah. I had no idea about any of those traditions. This was all brand new to me. Yeah.
Right.
And it's remarkable. I thought it was cool.
And
really
I
something.
Knew of it.
Yeah.
But enjoyed seeing it celebrated here. And so just to give some very basic orientation, I mean, Ushpizin means Sukkot guests. And this movie is about a tradition where, wait, I've got this in my notes somewhere. Basically, it's a religious festival that commemorates the 40 years that the Israelites spent wandering in the desert after leaving Egypt. And the Jewish community recalls it by building these temporary shelters or sukkahs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to be similar to what their ancestors would have done in the wilderness.
Yeah, in the movie they said, you know, a temporary shelter to remember that this life is temporary as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of beautiful. And
right,
they eat
right.
in it,
mm-hmm.
and they spend their time in it during these several days.
Yeah.
And it's called the Festival of Booths, if you're not speaking. You know,
right. So they all build these little booths outside, and even though their houses are just right over there, they stay in these things.
You know, at one point, for a little while, and I don't know why I lost track, I was reading a blog that a guy in Jerusalem, an Israeli man in Jerusalem, was doing. And he would talk about, and maybe that's why I know about this, he talked about doing it on their balcony in their apartment.
Wow.
Yeah, building a little booth where they would go out and they would eat their meals in there, and they would, I think, they would sleep in it maybe. But anyway, and so I was fascinated because he would talk about how excited the kids were about getting the palm fronds to put on the booth and all that kind of thing. So it's really a valid holiday.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know it's beautiful. It's really something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's that thing where those provide the touchstones of our of their modern lives, and you could look at our modern lives of that whole idea of the temporary nature. Mm-hmm. You're celebrating something that happened. You're acknowledging how you're similar and different, and you're looking at the fact that this says something about where you're going. Life is all temporary.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, and it doesn't mean you're depressed about it.
Yeah. Oh, I understand. I was just thinking, we, as Catholics, often we have, a feast day or something. It's on a Thursday, like the Assumption of Mary.
Right.
And, everybody's there on Sunday and he says, okay, we've got mass on Thursday night. And everybody's like, most people don't up. Most people don't show up. But you're like, when I see a tradition like this, which really disturbs your life. Mm-hmm. Which is the purpose of it, right? Mm-hmm. I think, we all could use some disturbing of our lives, right?
I guess so.
And I don't know. I'm just saying, that was one of the things that really impressed me is, how they're willing to do these rituals or would you call that a ritual? Whatever the exact word. Yeah, right. Yeah. But, you ought to be willing to let your life be disturbed for some of these things. And, this building a shack outside and living in it, that's quite a, it's like dropping a stone in the lake. I think it's good. It would be good. For
lots of ripples everywhere. Well, isn't that why the prophets were always sent to, disturb you and shake you up and remind you of what's really important, meaning God and how you're living. So this kind of, I guess, performs that same thing. That's interesting. Yeah,
I think it's good for people.
Yeah. Well, and I think that one of the things that's most interesting for me was the joy with which this couple embraces everything like this. They're, to quickly tell the plot, let's see, Moshi and Molly Balanga. Mm-hmm. They're childless, Hasidic returnees to Judaism, meaning that they're living a very orthodox, fairly strict life in this little community of people who all do the same thing. They call it the Breslov community. And Moshe studies with this one rabbi, and I guess they're supposed to get some kind of a stipend or something as part of their participation in the community, and he doesn't get it. Mm. And so they have nothing. You see the wife hiding from the landlord, you see, and they've got this holiday coming up and they have to buy the four species, which is one of which is this citron, which looks like a big lemon. Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to go have these feasts and live outside. And part of it is you're supposed to have guests. They can't even feed themselves. They don't know where guests might come from. And one of the things I love is that the thread that keeps being brought up for comparison is Abraham and Sarah in the Old Testament, who are also childless and have three guests show up out of nowhere, although they have plenty to give them a feast with. Mm-hmm. But so you're constantly reminded in the movie, just when Abraham and Sarah get brought up, it's their faith and their observance of how things are supposed to be that are going on when the guests show up and they get their heart's desire, which is a year later they have a baby, even though they're in their 90s. Mm-hmm. This couple is young, but they're continually looking back to those things to give them hope, or younger,
right?
Not in their 90s anyway. And anyway, so as they go on, unexpectedly, after a lot of prayer, kind of that
was a terrific beating
at the
scene.
Door.
Wow.
Wasn't that amazing?
Oh, yeah. I'd love that.
He goes
scene.
Off to pray in a heartfelt way. She's mm-hmm. praying in her apartment in a heartfelt way. And in between, you see the series of circumstances that bring them what they're asking for, mm-hmm. the money to celebrate in a way that's worthy of God.
Yeah.
They're not even asking for rent money. They want to be able to celebrate God properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they end up with $1,000 and,
slipped under the door.
One of the things that it was notable was immediately, I mean, the first thing that they do with the money is they take 10%.
Right.
And he gives it to, this guy who was helping him build the shack.
Yeah.
You know, the, yeah. Yeah. who, you know, had no money himself, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, and then they get their guests.
Mm-hmm.
But their guests aren't who they would, you know, you like some people who you could get along with. And these are a pair of escaped convicts. I didn't understand this, and I guess I should have asked somebody. But so if you're a convict, they just let you go home for holiday or something? Because they're standing outside the prison going, wow, I hate to go back after a break. And the first time I saw the movie, I thought they were guards or something.
Yeah, I did too. And because the English was leave. He said, I hate going on leave because I hate coming back. And yeah, that was interesting. And then as I slowly realized in the movie that they were convicts, that was surprising to me. I thought they were in the army or something.
Yeah. They are kind of on the run, mm-hmm. although they're not important enough to really have, you know, watches being made for them specifically, but they're looking out for cops. They don't know where to go. And they wind up in Jerusalem kind of just by accident, by happen chance, ha ha. Uh-huh. And one of them remembers that Moshe lives there, and they were friends way back before Moshe? Anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Before he entered the religious life, when he was evidently a very bad person. And so they go to stay with him, and the couple is overjoyed. Oh, we have guests. And then it goes down.
Yeah, they're not, religious people. I mean, they're difficult guests. They're guests, but they're not easy.
Yeah, and the rest of the story really is concerned with how does the couple handle these difficult guests who are still guests?
Mm-hmm.
And how does their behavior influence the action of the people who are visiting them? Because what I thought was interesting is the guy who seemed much lower class and who wasn't connected was really ready to take them at face value. Wow, what great people.
Mm-hmm.
And the one who knew Moshe from further back was like, oh, he's putting on an act.
Mm-hmm.
And when Moshe falls prey to temptation and tells a lie to get rid of them, the one who didn't trust them actually believed him by then.
Yeah.
The low-class one says, right? And they go check. And then that has ruined any trust that's been built up, and they really behave badly. And it occurred to me that every time something really went wrong was when the guy fell prey to temptation to not tell the truth.
Yeah.
To not live openly.
Yeah, that's a neat observation. I hadn't made that connection, but you're right. That's exactly right. The lower class guy, as you put it, he's the one who knew that he was lying.
Yeah.
You know, he says, oh, that wasn't true.
Yeah, they're not going to.
Yeah, that's funny that, you know, I hadn't thought about it in that context, but yeah, they both had flipped positions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, and the wife points out, and they're delighted to see them when they come back, because what the couple has realized after they lied and or the husband lied mm-hmm. and got rid of the couple, is they're like, oh my gosh, this was a test.
Yeah.
And we failed. We didn't make these guests welcome no matter what.
Yeah. And then they're overjoyed because they get a second chance.
Right. And I loved when the wife says, what kind of test is easy?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, because if it's easy, it's not a test. And it made me think of, in the Catholic way, we will talk about how we're all called to follow Christ. And he set the example he carried the cross. And we all have crosses in our everyday lives of things that are really hard mm-hmm. that you just have to go ahead with. Yeah. Those aren't ever referred to as tests, but in a sense they are. Because a lot of times you could just throw it down and walk away. And it's easy to talk intellectually about this. Oh, yes. But when it comes, it's difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
And we never expect it to be difficult. And the thing that I took away from this movie, one of the main things, was how familiarly and comfortably this couple talks to God. You know, when she's sitting on the porch smoking her cigarette going, you are sweet, you are righteous, you are whatever. Thank you for giving us another chance by sending these guests back. I am not going to let you down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, until they pull away, you think she's talking to a person, but she's just praying.
Yeah, that's right.
And toward the end, when he's mm-hmm. so frustrated and upset and angry, and he looks like he's going to do something violent, and he just runs away to where he can be alone, and he is screaming and crying to the heavens, I don't understand. I don't want to be angry. Help me understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like he was yelling at somebody who's standing right there.
Yep, sure enough.
It's that honest openness. And that reminded me, I liked that when I saw the movie the first time. And I was like, yeah, that's, I need to work more towards that kind of a relationship with God. I tend to think of pray to God a little more formally.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time, instead of just talking sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yep, I could sure use, yeah, a step in that direction, no question. You know, you know, rather than sitting down and saying, okay, now I'm going to be doing this. It should kind of be a constant thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, he's always there.
Well, yeah, it's just somebody that, just like we're talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
just talk to him too.
Right, exactly.
I think if you didn't watch this as a movie on faith, I would watch it as a movie about marriage.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so too. We, you know, that's a really good point because, yeah, that I mean, it was that relationship. I mean, it was really well done. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't always friendly to each other. Well, I take that back. They always were, but they would snip, you know,
yeah.
But it was forgiven all the time, you know, and there,
right.
you know, it wasn't, grudges weren't held.
Well, yeah, because mm-hmm. so far we've talked about the husband, but the wife was not perfect. You know, these
sure.
people show
yeah.
up. She's suspicious because they're kind of weird. And he's like, oh, don't worry. They're from the old days. She's like, how old are these old days? Oh, no, no. And
yeah, it was that is something that, you know, we need to discuss is that she was not aware of his past at all. And I don't know.
Oh, she was.
Was she? It seemed to me that it was a surprise.
No, I think what was a surprise to her was that they were convicts because she said, how old of the old days? And he's like, don't worry.
That's right. She did say that.
And but at that point, he didn't know anything other than they had come to visit. Later, he overhears them talking and realizes they're wanted by the police.
Mm.
But he doesn't tell her.
Right. Yep. Yep.
And she's mad because he knew that and went off and left her with them all day.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like, you weren't taking care of the situation properly. Thank you for leaving me with some convicts.
Right.
That's
yeah, that's true.
That's
yeah, I was thinking, for some reason, I was thinking that she was not aware of that, and that was news.
I know, I think that
you know, because she clearly was getting uncomfortable with, you know, they would kind of bounce around the stories of his old days, you know, but they didn't. He asked them not to go there, you know, don't talk about jail, don't do this.
Yeah.
You know, when they were in private.
Well, she doesn't, she just doesn't like them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why she's kind of, because they aren't behaving in a very polite way sometimes, and they are kind of low class. And so she's doing that thing she shouldn't do. She's giving them the evil eye a lot.
Mm hmm.
Or, you know, these suspicious looks or whatever. And because when they come back, she's like, oh, thank you. I won't let you down again. Mm-hmm. She's much more welcoming and open.
Yeah, she is. And while they were gone, they said that she was the problem.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He's okay. But, you know, she's the one who's bad influence on him.
They both fail the test.
Yeah, exactly.
Together. I mean, as their own people, they both fail.
That's right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I thought it was, I loved the whole idea of, wow, thank you, God, you gave me this. And I don't want to say that it came with strings attached, but it's that thing of, you have this bounty, what will you do with it?
Mm-hmm.
How do you use it in your life worthily? God doesn't put any strings on it. They could have turned those guests away, but are you going to try to do this anyway? And if you do, there's a great benefit to you. And a great, just personally, and then a great benefit to the guests, obviously, as we see at the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
Where if nothing else, I'm not sure exactly what them showing up at the very end implies other than they've maintained contact and they know to bring a gift for the baby at the end.
Right, right.
Yeah,
there's a certain respectful attitude that they didn't have before.
Right.
Yeah. And that alone, you know, is a step in a direction.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and that's the way with our own lives. You're given things, just because you need them. You ask for them. God knows what you need. Yeah. But how do we live our lives with those things? Are we gracious? Are we trying to do what God wants in terms of, I don't know, that generosity thing?
Mm-hmm.
Are we half-hearted? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to express it exactly.
Yeah, I think I understand, you know, because it, you know, that always occurs to me as well, you know, and especially during this movie is, you know, the whole idea of, you know, you're going to pray for something, you know, and then you get something. And sometimes the getting it is not really what you wanted. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, everybody, you know, prays, please make me rich, you know, and I don't see that rich people are happier than I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It comes with its own set of problems. You know, so you can live your life trying to make money all the time, you know, and that doesn't seem like a good way to live to me.
Yeah.
You know, so
I guess it's that idea of, and I know there's some parable that Christ says, and I'm sure it's all through the Old Testament too, but those who much is given to, much is expected of. It's almost a Spider-Man thing.
That's right.
But, you know, you're given this big miracle, use it well.
Yeah. And then, you know, the parable of the talents. You know, you're given certain talents, hey, you got to use them.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And that is part of the difficulty too, because God doesn't want you burying the shekels in the ground, right?
Right.
So,
right, take them and spread them around, invest them, use them wisely, so there's some kind of return. And that's, in a sense, what's underlying all of this.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to use what they got?
Right, right.
And it all comes down to intention, once again. They're going through the motions, right? But these two guests can tell what their intentions are, whether friendly or, you know, kind of jinx, like they said, of the wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And it leads to the wife actually walking out because he's not honest with her. And
that's the reason, you know, because he wasn't honest. And yeah, that was a blow.
Although I do want to say that it's also one of those movies that it's funny in a lot of places. Like when they're having this argument and the two guys are lying under the bed hiding from the cops who were in the neighborhood. And one of them keeps interjecting into the argument and the wife will go over and start kicking at him under the bed. Stop it. Just shut up. You're part of the problem. He's like, oh, whoa.
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny. Yeah, we need to mention that these people, the actors, are actually husband and wife. That's an interesting story. The lead actor in this, Shuley Rand, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Joseph mentioned some of this in his review, which we'll certainly point to on the on the website. But he's a person. He grew up. It says I'm looking on Wikipedia here, so it says in a religious Zionist family, and attended the Or Etzion Yeshiva until age 18. Then he went in the army, which is what you do in Israel, right? And then he embarked on a career in theater where he relinquished orthodoxy. So he became a very successful actor, won awards, you know, best Israeli actor, you know, several times it looks like.
Right.
And then he returned to Orthodox Judaism and made this movie, you know, with, you know, a rabbi's blessing and everything. And one of the requirements was that he wanted his wife to play his wife in the movie. So he wrote the movie. Shuley Rand wrote the movie. And then Mikhail Batsheva Rand is his wife, had no previous acting experience.
She was terrific.
And she was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were terrific.
Oh, yeah.
Really great.
Well, and what I thought was interesting is, this is from Joseph's review, which it says Israeli director Gidi Dar, who had previously worked with Rand, he convinced him to consider doing this because he said, nobody has really shown this society positively. And it says, as Dar himself said, there have been films done about this society in the past, but they've always been done from the outside using actors and usually from a very critical point of view. I wasn't interested in criticizing them. And I thought of that when you're watching the one scene where the two guests decide they're going to be as obnoxious as possible because they're mad.
Mm-hmm.
They were lied to and they're going to show up. They're going to get mushy to show his bad side. And so they're being horrible and they're disrupting the whole community by playing this really loud music and having barbecue in the middle of the courtyard. And you do see a very interesting dynamic from the whole community coming out to yell at them. And there's one younger guy who's going, wait, wait, I'll talk to them because it's not right to do this. But the older guys are all just like, get out of here, you barbarian, or whatever they're calling him.
Yeah.
And they're just being obnoxious. The guests are just being obnoxious back. And when the younger guy goes to talk to him, they're just as bad to him. And he turns around and he's like, well, I don't know what to do now. And he knows it's not right to kick him out, but he also so strongly disapproves. He doesn't know what to do. So eventually they call the police. And I was looking at that going, I understand the disruption to the community. And a lot of these people they're showing are older, but isn't this against the whole idea of this holiday is when guests show up?
Mm-hmm.
If these are somebody's guests, shouldn't they somehow not be screamed at, but reasoned with in a different way or something?
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
I could see that being the less tolerant side, because it gets the couple in trouble with the whole community. The wife's down there and she's trying to stop them, but she's trying to stop the community and no one's paying any attention to her.
Right, right.
So
yeah, yeah, that's interesting perspective there, because you're right. They should all be welcoming the guests, but the guests are being difficult.
Yeah, or trying to deal with them in some way like that.
Tough situation, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I understand everybody's point of view in essence, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a no-win situation.
I know. And then I look at these cops who've come in and Moshi's talking to them. Well, you know, they were doing that, playing loud music. And oh, so no one was hurt or whatever. Mm-hmm. No. And this is a regular looking cop. He's got short hair. He's in regular, you know, modern uniform. And I'm thinking he must be going, oh, one of these religious things again. Fine. You know, leaving.
Yep.
So.
Oh, that's fun.
But it was just kind of interesting. Well, and that leads to the thing where the wife's leaning, looking out over the courtyard, and her husband comes up and she says, give me a cigarette. And he's like, no, we're out here in public. She says, they've seen everything. Give me a cigarette. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that you'd be disapproved of for smoking a cigarette. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that was kind of an interesting little dynamic of the community too. She'll just smoke by herself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at home.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, so the whole trip from or journey, I guess you'd say, of the character from wherever he was as a person to who he mm-hmm. is now. It's interesting that there's a little bit of a parallel with the actual actor and the guy who wrote it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I'm sure that he wasn't as bad as he's being made out to be in the thing. You know, apparently he was, you know, had a terrible temper and all that kind of stuff. The character did, you
right,
know, and
right.
I don't know, the violence was implied, you know, that he was a very violent person.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. You know, I doubt that the actor was, but, you know, I'm sure that's where he drew that. It's just, you know, I like that story. It's interesting. It says here that he was 8 years between, you know, when he, it says Rand withdrew from acting in order to realize his religious aspirations, but after an 8-year hiatus, returned to the screen with this movie.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Well, because the Orthodox community supported it and everything, and he mm-hmm. won awards for it, and the film won awards. And but I was thinking about that point that you said about the character had, you know, that horrible temper and a very violent past, it sounded like, from mm-hmm. the story that we were told. But in a sense, that's something that it was an interesting dynamic between the person who used to know him, who was just pushing him, waiting to see when he was going to betray. He hadn't really changed. He was still the same. Because we all have things that we've done that we're sorry for.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully not like that. But we try to change and do better. We try to follow God and the way that he's shown us that is a better way. And think of it in our society, of course, among our friends, there are people watching when you fail.
Yeah, and there's jealousy there too. You know, and I felt that from that character, that guest character too. Where,
I didn't think of that.
You know, it's like, you know, you and I used to pal around together and we did terrible things and I'm still doing those things. And I think that, you know, in a lot of ways we do that to each other. Like, you know, when you meet somebody who may have got their financial house in order and they're doing very well now, and you look at that and there's a jealousy that comes up because, well, if I had done those things too, I would be in that same position. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you didn't. So you want to see, well, there's these flaws in his life that, you know, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like you're digging around saying, well, you know, his life isn't so great because, you know.
Right. Because it makes you feel better about yourself.
Exactly. It makes you feel better, which is, you know.
Yeah. And I guess so. It's interesting. So do we do this to other people? Do we come under this kind of scrutiny ourselves? Because the guy's not trying to, the mushy's not trying to act holier than thou. He's just trying to live his life.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
But to people who aren't part of that life, it looks like that.
Yeah, it's kind of part of its
and
test.
So how does his own life give witness? And so this whole story talks about when you stumble and fall, what happens? Because we all stumble and fall. You know, to talk about, oh, he shouldn't have told those lies, we all understand the impulse he had.
Mm-hmm.
Those people were difficult. And but that's where the kind of the tale takes an interesting turn when they're like, oh, thank goodness you showed up. You gave us a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
That's interesting. That dovetails together, too, is the whole idea of you can't really leave your past.
Right.
And, you know, they were unable to leave their immediate past by getting rid of these guests. And then we're happy at having the second chance. It's only, and then in the same way, you know, he has this past that he has left behind. But you can't ignore that it exists. It's, you know, something that you still have to accept, right?
Yes.
And, so it's almost, you know, two circles within a circle right there. Cause you know, he's got his immediate past in which he did wrong that he needs to repent for right now. And then his distant past, which this guy was part of, one of his guests was part of.
And they're linked together.
Yeah.
Well, and that's interesting because also when they repent and say, oh, thank goodness we have another chance, they don't go around beating themselves up over what they did.
No, they didn't.
They just kind of deal with what's going on. They turn to God, especially later when the husband and wife are having a big argument. And then they move forward, which is also a very healthy way to deal with it. You know, they're sorry when they're sorry.
Right. There's some acceptance there.
Yeah, I did this thing wrong. Oh my gosh, I need to make up for it. But they don't beat themselves up later. Of course, maybe they do. We don't see that in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
We just see the joyful ending.
Right, right. Which was great. Yeah, we haven't mentioned. Well, you did mention once about, you know, she's they want to have a son. They've been married 5 years and have not been able to conceive.
Right.
And, you know, that's a large part of their dynamic as well.
Mm-hmm.
Comes up all the time.
Well, and that's when they start bringing up Abraham and Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I suddenly think about it, I know it's really obvious to anybody else, but Sarah and Abraham wandering in the wilderness, this is during the Feast of Booths when they're in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
This is their wilderness. When God just says, go out. Mm-hmm. And do this. And Abraham and Sarah, I was reading recently, are actually probably were quite wealthy. We always think of them going out with a tent with maybe a couple of camels and a servant, or at least that's how I think of it, you know.
Yeah.
But they're able to provide this wonderful feast at the drop of a hat. And at some point, I think it talks about him and his followers. You know, he and Lot are out and they're dividing the land up. And so for him to have all these followers and all this stuff, he had to be doing really well back where he was. So this couple is given all this wealth, then what happens? They're out in the wilderness. They have all this wealth. The visitors show up. So it is a parallel with that whole story.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is.
I mean, I know I mentioned that before, but I'm just now kind of it's sinking in a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
What a clever job this fellow did.
Yeah. I really like that stuff, you know, like East of Eden.
Yeah.
You know, when you discover this thread in there, I mean, it just, it's really cool. Satisfying.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's well written, well acted. I mean,
and joyful.
Yeah, and joyful, which is just refreshing.
Yes. Well, and because when they, I have to say, a lot of movies that are like made from a faith basis, like Christian movies, which mm-hmm. I generally don't enjoy, mostly because they keep saying, "Here's our point. Do you get it? Let's hammer it home one more time." And we're just like, really? Thank you. This movie is making all those same points, but it's doing it from such an honest standpoint of just watching this couple live during this time of their lives that you don't feel like they're slapping you around with it.
Yeah, and that's,
this is just how they
that's a really, you know, it'd be interesting to study this movie from that perspective because clearly they had, you know, some kind of a purpose here. And they were saying, you know, we're going to make this movie and it's going to be positive and all this stuff. And then they do it and it doesn't come, you don't come away from that thinking, you know, like it's a Left Behind movie or something.
Right.
You know, some of those Christian movies are just horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And, but, you know, what's the difference? You know, what do they do that's different? And I think it's neat to look at that.
That is interesting because to me, what just flashed into my mind is on this trip to Pennsylvania or Virginia and Pennsylvania that we took, we're driving along. And every so often, we're going through Tennessee and Virginia and everywhere. By the side of the road or on the back of trucks, you'd see signs and they'd say things like, "Hell is real. Repent now while you've got time." Or, you know, John 3:16, "For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son," or whatever. And Tom and I were always looking at each other going, "Oh, yeah, that's going to make a few people repent." Like, that's not going to convert any. Unless you already have that on your mind and you suddenly go, "Oh, my gosh, I saw that at just the right time." What are the odds, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so to me, those Christian movies are kind of like those billboards. Hey, here's our message. Listen up.
Mm-hmm.
Versus meeting somebody who's genuine and talking to them just as a person and suddenly realizing, oh, wait, this is a strain that goes through their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like that the guests do with the couple. It's you have to see it up close and in the little things. You can't just be slapped around with a big message. That's God's job.
Yeah.
You can't go around converting people like that.
Right, right.
I could be wrong, but to me,
I think you're right.
Would never work.
Yeah.
Those movies are made for the people who already think that way.
Yeah, yeah.
I think. That's
I think
why
so
I find more effective movies are the ones that aren't directed at that. They're just telling a story.
And I think that that's the key. It's is that it's a story. And that these things are being not told but demonstrated. Through lives mm-hmm. and through lives that are not flawless, you know, and you know, cause there's, you know, plus and minus in the wife and the husband, you know, there's no paragon of virtue in this movie, which is mm-hmm. real, you know? And I think all too often in the Christian movies, you've got, you know, some characters that are just there for, you know, info dumping.
Right. Yeah. They never stop and kind of look the camera and go, "And here's the point in case you didn't get it, everyone."
As you know, Bob, God, this is where God
comes in. I'm just going to say, after Fireproof, I think I have the best example of that kind of horrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to put that out there. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, not that I didn't approve of the overall point of the movie, but it was told so clumsily.
Yeah, so there's an art to it.
Yeah, it's a real turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
It, to anybody hammering you with some point so clumsily, it's...
Yeah.
Anyway, this movie doesn't do that. It's joyful. It celebrates marriage. It celebrates faith. And it celebrates the fact that we don't have to all be part of the same community in order to be friends and teach each other stuff. Those guests taught the couple, too.
Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm.
They all enlightened each other on the path, and that's what we're all here for. We're all here for that community. That's kind of the point, too.
Yeah.
Because we're all wandering in the wilderness together, in a sense.
Yeah.
Big message, sure. Hammer. Hammer. Sorry.
I love it. That's cool.
Oh, I call that on myself. Oh.
Heck yeah.
I guess that's what we do here anyway.
That is what we do here. We've got big clubs, right?
Yeah, I guess we were with a bunch of relatives recently, and somebody had said how she loved the Lord of the Rings movies so much. And I said, oh, yeah, but after on this podcast I'm on, meaning this one, after we had talked about The Hobbit and then I reread The Lord of the Rings, and we were talking about how you and I were talking about how the movies didn't hold up as well as we had thought they did because of this. Mm-hmm. So this one person and I are talking and everybody else is kind of listening. And then somebody goes, well, if I wanted a class, I would have paid for it. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, oh, but I was loving this.
Like, this is what we do.
I know. I was like, but this is fun, isn't it? So then we talked about other things.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I guess no one's listening who already doesn't want to hear it.
Well, I've had similar experiences, you know, where somebody is, you know, says something about a movie and I'm like, yeah, wasn't it interesting? This and that and this and this. And, and they're like, you know, blank look. And you're like, okay, yeah, I guess it was good.
And they go, well, it was funny. yeah, it was.
Yeah. So, yeah, BASFF Audio and this podcast and you, you know, have changed my life for the better in that way. I don't read the same as I do, and I don't watch movies the same as I used to. And it's enriching. It's really great.
I know. Yeah. Isn't it more interesting?
Yeah. I remember I was reading a book about writing one time, long time ago, and it was talking about how, you know, it kind of ruins your reading life to read this, you know, kind of how the sausage is made stuff. And, you know, how I can't, you know, the author of the book was saying, I can't read a book without discovering how they put it together and how I usually know what the end's going to be because I can see the pieces, you know, being laid, and I can usually figure that out, you know, and, you know, right. I haven't found that was true. I still enjoy reading.
Well, and I think because we're not looking at it from the technical sense so much as what are the other layers of meaning in it.
Yeah, exactly. That's it too, you know, and there are reasons that things are put together in a certain way, you know, like we could analyze Ushpizin in a certain way and say, okay, mm-hmm. this scene exists for these things. And I do understand it in that perspective too, but yes, it hasn't destroyed my ability to look at this and say, this is wonderful.
And, oh yeah.
They did a good job. And
the other thing that was interesting is at some other point, we're talking about a different movie and somebody had really just loved this one movie. And so this person and I were just really talking about it and somebody else just burst out laughing because they were thinking of it in a completely different way, much more basic, based on somebody who said they were related to the movie somehow, mm-hmm. who was kind of a laughable person. And all of a sudden, a defense came from a completely unexpected point of view, which was somebody who'd been reading a book about Roger Miller and the way he, in writing songs, looked at putting the music together, telling the story. And he made the point that everything is a piece of art, even if it's just a song. And how the people receive it is valid, which is a point we've made before. So he was saying, don't laugh at people because they're seeing more in it. That's perfectly valid. What people did and took and created out of, you know, somebody who you might find laughable can tell a very rich tale.
That's cool. Roger Miller.
Yeah, I know. Love it. I was like, I have to read this book about him. I don't remember the name, but I was like, I just didn't expect that. And I was like, I never thought about it as related to music.
That's cool.
But that's how it is. I can sit down and I know nothing about music, but I can listen to a symphony and go, wow, I love that. Somebody who knows more will go, oh my gosh, listen to these themes that are repeated and all this stuff. And I can be told that and appreciate it and enjoy listening to it. But on the end, I'm still going to go, but I just love it. I love how it sounds. I love how it makes me feel.
Yeah.
And that's it with this movie or other movies and books.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
You know?
Yep. And then the value of fiction, you know, one of the values of fiction is how it makes you understand other. It helps you experience what it's like to be someone else. And this movie does that for me too, in that I feel that I come away with just a little bit of knowledge about these people that, you know, I see and I don't understand, you know, so it just adds understanding. And with understanding comes tolerance and all that other stuff. And can't we all get along? Everything like that. You know what I mean?
Do we have to all be the same? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We don't.
Yep.
Because how boring would that be? Very.
That'd be tough.
Yeah.
What? Trantor from Foundation, right? Giant planet, all one giant city, and everybody's kind of the same.
I forgot that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. As infuriating as those guests are, that's the thing we were saying. You know, they have another facet to display of being people.
Yeah.
And they show us part of ourselves, too.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not looking forward to the time when we're all the same. Should that ever happen?
No, because think about the different kinds of fiction that show stuff is like, here's Ushpizin. And in some ways, it shows a lot of the same things as Bruges.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in effing Bruges, as I always tend to think.
That's interesting. And you know, it's one of the things that appeals to me about the whole Catholic Church as well, is that it's realistic in that we share, you know, in Mass, we share a common core, but yet there are differences culturally. You know, it doesn't say, okay, we're all going to be the same. And it doesn't say that. You know, there's just this core of the things that we all do that are the same. But then there are all these cultural differences that are celebrated. And I think that, you know, if there is a true religion, it's got to be something that says this works in all cultures. And Catholicism seems to.
That's a good point, because I have heard recently people, two or three different people, I guess, talking about the Catholic Church has survived this long because it has adapted. And it's not that it's adapted. It's that it crosses those boundaries.
Yeah. And they say, you know, if you read
elements.
Yeah. If you read Justin Martyr, you know, one of the church fathers, he wrote a document. I forget what the document's called, but he was defending himself to the Romans, and by explaining what it is that we do, he's saying, you know, this is what we do. And you read that, and you're like, holy cow, this is Mass. He's talking about, you know, reading some of the Word, and you know, so the liturgy of the Word is there, and the liturgy of the Eucharist is there, and what he is explaining, you know, in the year like 110 or something like that. And so, you know, when they say the Catholic Church is adapted, I don't know that that's quite exactly true, because it's just that core is there, right? And and it's the same now. And it's the same if I go to Mexico, and it's the same if I go to Brazil, and it's the same if I go to Poland. It's that germ is there. Yet what it does is it allows the cultures. It doesn't subsume the culture. It's not supposed to.
Right.
It becomes part of the culture, or the culture is allowed to incorporate that into itself.
Yes.
So I don't know if you call that adaption or not. I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah, it's because it's celebrated in those cultures' expressions, so that the people understand it in those ways. And I think that's why this movie works so well, because it doesn't matter if you understand everything about being a Hasidic Jew or part of that particular little Breslau community. They're telling a human story.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everybody understands that story of mm-hmm. the conflict between the two different groups of people, the people who are trying to be true to what's right, the people who are testing them. That's all understood.
Yeah.
Because that transcends it. It's a good story. And it because it appeals to our humanity, and that's the element you're talking about in the church. That same story could be adapted if you stayed true to everything and moved to another community somewhere else, if you had that strong thread of what holds that couple together. Like, and I don't mean anything disrespectful to them, but like if you took it to a Catholic household or a whatever household with a similar sort of a situation, you could put in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, it's a human thing.
Yeah.
To put it eloquently.
That's exactly right.
It's a
right.
human thing. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. Thanks again for picking this one. It was great.
So glad you
liked
it.
Nice experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and we didn't even mention the citron.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. How could we not have mentioned that?
I know. And that's
paying 1,000 shekels, which Wikipedia says is about $300.
Yeah.
So a third of that money that they got on a citron. The wife was not impressed.
Yeah.
But he said, hey, this will give us luck to have a boy, you know?
Yeah.
So then she said, oh, okay.
It gets used in a salad.
Yes. By the guest.
Who are doing an act of generosity and kindness because they feel bad.
Right.
So they make a nice dinner
mm-hmm.
with a delicious salad. It's pure health itself.
Right.
Says somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Wow.
I looked at that and not having the proper orientation, I just looked at it and went, yeah, it's after this thing was gone that everything fell back into place. Hmm. You can't place your dependence on citrons.
Yeah, and it's got kind of a larger impact too, you know, at least to me. You know, if there have been times in my life where I've owned something that I've given way too much importance to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, kids, don't touch that. You know, this is my Star Trek plate or whatever it might be.
Oh,
you know what
yes.
I mean? I don't want anybody scratching it. And then at some point you get to, you know, it's like, this is so silly. You know, yep. It's like, I don't know. I'm afraid I'm going to offend some people here. But, you know, when you buy like Star Trek toys, for example, mm-hmm. and keep them in the package because you want yes. to save them, you know, and you know, I imagine there are some collectors out there, you know, this is an investment and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, those things don't go up in value enough for it to really matter. But, you know, once you see a kid play with that toy, that's the value of the toy, you know?
Right.
And, I don't know. There's a point at which you realize that, and it's just, you know, becomes silly. And that's kind of what I felt about that citron. Is
yes.
you know, here he spent a fortune on it. It's got value to him. He's protecting it in this little box with foam in it. Mm-hmm. And then these guys cut it up and put it in a salad. And I knew he was going to flip out. But
yeah.
Was it worth flipping out about? You know, it's almost like, you know, buying a gorgeous car and then spending all your time worried mm-hmm. about it. You know,
the car guys always said, go out and put a scratch on that car yourself or it will own
yeah,
you.
Yeah, right, right.
But but the thing is he flips out, but that's his moment of,
it's his moment of
correction
zen.
With God. Huh? Yeah,
I said, it's his moment of zen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In a very violent, screaming, tear-filled way down yeah, on the ground. Yes.
Exactly.
That's so Zen-like.
He reaches Zen, right? Eventually.
Yeah, but that's when he's just like, I don't understand anything. And mm-hmm. is it after that he's sitting there going, you're nothing?
Yeah.
You're nothing. And the guy right. goes, oh, really? The convicts, because his wife mm-hmm. has left him everything. The citron's gone. All hope is gone.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, really? What are you? And he says, I'm nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the point. Only God matters. And I think that's the point when his old friend finally takes him seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
He felt bad before about what happened. It was their fault. But that's when he's seen him not react violently. He's seen him just so down in the dumps. And he's like, only God matters. And it's that testimony of his anguish that helps turn the corner in a sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, good moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we hit bottom right there. And
we all do that.
Yep.
We all have those things, and it's not because of anything God did. It's because we ourselves have been so blind to something that we just can't see the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. No question.
I don't know if that's what the citron represented, but since that art is out there and that's what it said to me, that's where it went.
So I'm just going to say. That's what it means. Yep. That's for us. That's for sure.
For us, exactly. American Catholics.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It represents stuff. It's the ring from Lord of the Rings.
Yes. One ring, one citron to rule them all.
That's right.
Oh, we just had to have somebody to smash it up.
Good deal. I'm glad we mentioned that because, that would have been terrible oversight.
Yes, watching those guys take the loop and look at the citron was fascinating. I was like, are you for real? This is the most perfect citron ever. I'm like, what?
1,000 shekels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was astounded.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, great. All right. Well, what do we got coming up next?
Let's see here. Something that's not quite so cheerful. The Hiding Place.
The Hiding Place. Yeah, by Corey Ten Boom. Boom. Mm-hmm. Not Bloom. Boom.
Yes. <All right. laughs> So that's the faith book.
Right. And then we're going to go off into comedy. The movie I picked for September 19th. Let's talk about Galaxy Quest.
Can't wait.
Yes, just for fun.
Oh, yeah. So
that'll
good.
Be a fun movie to talk about. And then after that, a book, World War Z by Max Brooks. Not really a parallel, but Ushpizin was in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem plays a part in World War Z.
I come out admiring the Israelis more than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, we'll talk obviously about that book, but
we will.
It's amazing what's in there. Just really surprised
by it.
Quite
a deep book.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll talk about that on October 3rd. That'll be our first. We got 3 October things, which is awesome.
Oh, it's a wonderful October month.
Yes. And then after that, a movie. Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I considered so many movies. I couldn't remember what I decided on. Pan's Labyrinth, which is a wonderful fairy tale set during the Spanish Civil War from Guillaume del Toro, I believe is his name.
Right.
Yes.
And then on Halloween itself.
Yeah.
What we are book not messing better around. Than The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson?
Oh, if you're not scared by this book, you do not have a storytelling soul. Done.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be fun.
Yes.
It's going to be great. So, all right.
Yes. Prepare to be scared.
All right. Okay.
Have you read that book?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Even better.
Yep. Even better.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see you in a couple weeks, everybody.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. Yes.
Bye.
Bye-bye.